There had always been this legend that there was a mountain of gold, but nobody could find it. We sampled around Aradaya. There were tailings there that were fairly high grades in them, but in the rest of the wadi and the area around it, we couldn't find really much of anything. It was pretty barren. Then, looking at Google Earth, we saw the remnants of old paths. The geologists went up there and looked, and sure enough, when they got to the top, there were the remnants of extensive ancient workings. Underground, we found old clay lamps with wicks still in them, ancient ropes, and we're pretty sure nobody's been up there for 1,600 years, and that's really, that's that mountain of gold, and that's what we've done extensive channel sampling on. Now we're going to drill it starting on Monday.
You are listening to Mining Stock Education. I'm Bill Powers, your host. Thanks for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Today's episode will be a CEO spotlight interview profiling a junior miner striving for Africa's next major gold discovery. This company possesses some first-mover advantages in the underfollowed jurisdiction of Egypt. I'm speaking of Aton Resources. Aton trades on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AAN and on the OTC markets in the States under the ticker symbol ANLBF. I'm speaking today with Mark Campbell, who's the CEO of Aton Resources. Mark, thanks for joining me today and welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Bill.
Let's begin by talking about this underfollowed jurisdiction of Egypt. If you could briefly describe the history of gold mining in the Arabian-Nubian Shield in Egypt, as well as the current day gold mining activities that are occurring in Egypt.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is, Egypt at the moment is pretty underexplored. We have one operating gold mine, and that's Centamin Sukari mine down at Marsa Alam, which, of course, is a world-class mine. But outside of that, there are really only two exploration companies working here, ourselves, and we've been here for 11 years, and another company called Tani Stratex. The history of mining in Egypt goes back a millennia. We have a concession area of 732 square kilometers. Within that, we have evidence of mining going back to the old kingdom of the Pharaonic period, through the Romans, right up through the early Arabs, and then jump forward to when the British were here, which predominantly ended right around the beginning of the First World War. But we have three old British mines still in existence, underground mines. Two were gold, one was high-grade tungsten. And so there has been activity here. You can see the results of Egyptian mining going back to ancient times, even if you just look at King Tut's household effects. Most of all that gold, copper, zinc all came from Egypt, and Egypt has a history of mining all of those materials, as well as gemstones in the past. So it has a very rich history. But it really stopped when the 52 revolution came, and oil took off in the late 50s, early 60s, and mining really became moribund. And it wasn't to really kickstart again until Centamin came in the early 1990s and went on to discover Sukari and build that mine. We came here in 2006. We have a concession called Abu Marawat. And Abu Marawat, on that, we have at the moment about 19 identified targets, but the biggest exploration target that we have in the we'll start drilling on Monday, is Rod Ruin, a discovery we made back in December of last year. We also have a development project, which is a project we've been working on for several years, which is Hamama, and we're starting off on the western end, which is a super gene-enriched oxide cap, and we're looking at developing a heap leach there operation that we would like to see come into production by the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. But Rod Ruin, at the moment, we think could be one of the bigger discoveries made in Egypt to date. And to give you an idea of history of mining, it's an interesting story. It's a very large hill We had to build a road 4.5 kilometers up it just to get to where we're going to start drilling. It's got two ridges separated by a valley between them. And really, the story goes that for many years, there's a husband and wife team called Clem and Clem, who wrote a book about the history of gold mining in Egypt. And it's really the definitive work on the subject. And in there, they discuss an area called Eridaia. And Eridaia is a large wadi where there were the remains of ancient processing works. And they looked around, they couldn't find anything else, but there had always been this legend that there was a mountain of gold somewhere. And but nobody could find it. We sampled around Eridaia. There were tailings there that had fairly high grades in them. But in the rest of the wadi and the area around it, we couldn't find really much of anything. It was pretty barren. So we weren't sure why they were out there. We did some satellite imagery. And on that satellite imagery, we have found in various areas carbonates that when we went and sampled them, in some cases they had a small amount of mineralization, but most were barren. And so was the case at Rod Ruin. But then looking at Google Earth, we saw the remnants of old paths going up the side of this thing. It's very steep, getting up to some places 70% gradient. And the geologists went up there and looked, and sure enough, when they got to the top, there were the remnants of extensive ancient workings. Underground, we found old clay lamps with wicks still in them, ancient ropes. And we're pretty sure nobody's been up there for 1,600 years. And that's really, that's that mountain of gold. And that's what we've done, extensive channel sampling. Now we're going to drill it starting on Monday.
With ancient mining methods, how deep could they go back in that time period when...
Well, I mean, they've got down in one area, which we will drill to begin with, which we call Aladdin's Slot. That goes down 40 meters. And just in the area that we're going to be drilling, we're going to drill about 4,000 to 6,000 meters up there. You have it's about 700 by 400. Aerial extent, and then down to 40 meters. Now, we found another area which could go down deeper, but it's filled in with rubble where the tunnels have all collapsed over the years. So it's hard to tell how deep that may be. At the moment, it goes down to about 15 meters, but it could be deeper, as I say, because a lot of it's collapsed in on itself.
In the Rod Ruin drilling program, I believe that's reverse circulation. So are you looking at an open pittable project right now, conceptually?
Yeah, conceptually, that would be a large bulk open pit operation. We've contracted an RC drill, and we don't have a lot of water. And RC, it's faster, it's cheaper. But this is a multi-purpose rig. So at some point we will come back for structure and drill diamond, and the same rig can do that. Without, we don't have to bring in a separate rig.
Let's talk about the scale of your land package. So listeners can get an idea of that. And then could you also talk about your NI 43101 compliant resource that you already have in this land package?
Well, we have actually two 43101s. We have one at Abu Marawat, which is quite small, and then one at Hamama, which is roughly about 400,000 ounces of gold equivalent, and that's the oxide cap. Although Hamama runs, their strike length is about 6 kilometers. It is mostly sulfide, so we couldn't heap leach those. We'd have to go and take a second step of building building a CIL plant. But the area is quite large. It's we even having cut it down from its initial size, we're still at 732 square kilometers. Over the last 2 years, we've done extensive regional exploration work, as well as working at Hamama. And in that, we have identified as I say, up to 19 legitimate exploration targets, some of which are drill ready. But in December, as I mentioned, we found Rod Ruin, and the scale that we see at Rod Ruin and what we believe its potential to be is such that that really has become our major focus. One of the things that makes it interesting is that it is strange geology. We've never seen anything like this. And from what we can see, we can't find any record of anything like it in Egypt. So it's really very interesting. It's all the mineralizations in sediments and basically mineralized slates, which are associated with the carbonates there. And so it's an interesting animal. We've also identified, we have various styles of geology. We have a sort of VMS epithermal style geology, which you find at Hammamet, but we also have replacement intrusive type geology that you find at some of the other areas, plus some, you know, orogenic structurally controlled type geology that you find at, say, places like Abu Ghraib. So it's quite an interesting area. One of the things about Egypt that makes it so interesting is that it really is underexplored. And so a lot of what we do is working out the geology and the environment that we work in, as well as working to find an economically viable deposit. So it makes it very interesting, especially if you're an explorationist. It's sort of an exploration Disney world out there.
As a mining speculator looks at Eton Resources, would the Rod Ruin drill program be the main catalyst for the share price that we would see upcoming, and when can we expect those drill results?
I think that this Rod Ruin is the one to watch, without a doubt. And say we're going to start. So you're going to be looking for the first drill results coming out probably around the back end of September.
Let's skip back over to discussing Egypt as a mining jurisdiction, because it's so underfollowed. Can you talk about Egypt as a mining jurisdiction as it specifically rates to the potential viability of bringing whatever deposit you may find into actual production?
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's one of the issues that people always talk about with Egypt is the mining regime. Egypt, as I say, had really lost its way in terms of mining, and oil and gas became the main focus. And in the early 80s, having gone to a production sharing agreement in the oil and gas business, they decided, well, if it works for oil and gas, it'll work for mining. Yes and no is the answer to that. Production sharing agreement was set up back in the 70s, and it really was so that a lot of countries felt that they weren't getting the true benefit out of their own natural resources in oil and gas. And so they went ahead and basically the premises of it is that you come in, you take an exploration concession license, you have an agreement with the government whereby if you make a commercial discovery, you form a 50-50 joint venture company with the government. So the government owns 50% of it. You then are allowed to recover all the costs, recover your costs on exploration and development. And once you've done that, then that's when you start sharing the profits. The government, and this is through the state oil company, then sells the oil and gas on behalf of the joint venture company. And this has been a model that works from Algeria to Indonesia, and you know, it works very well in the oil and gas industry. Not so much, and really this is from the government's point of view, or it should be from the government's point of view, is from the government, because you know, in oil and gas, all your costs are up front. You have very low operating costs, whereas in mining, you have very low exploration costs. and very high back end development costs. So it can take the government a long time to actually end up sharing anything with you. In our case, that's the situation, and it has, and plus we have a 3% net smelter royalty that we pay as well. The difference really between tax and the royalty and the and how it affects us economically with the cost recovery mechanism is not that big. It's sort of 22.5% versus roughly 24%, but for the PSA. But it's what a lot of people dislike is this 50-50 joint venture, because you already have a 50% partner. It's also laborious, and in the case of mining, the government doesn't sell the gold. You have the right to sell your own gold. So in the case of Centamin, Sukari sells their doré to a refinery in Canada. So it's but the good news is that the government has realized that mining has really lagged in the development here, that there are very few players. And so roughly 6 months ago, earlier this spring, they employed Wood Mackenzie, who are a large consulting firm who specifically work in natural resources, and who had done the same thing. They had redefined the mining regime, revamped the mining law in Ecuador, and I think you can see over the last several years the explosive growth that has occurred in Ecuador. And they are working now with the government. The government seems very willing to accept these changes. And we think that and this will happen in a relatively short period of time. The implementation may take some time. But what is good from our perspective is that under the amendments to the 2015 mining law, we are able to move ourselves under that new regime if we see that it's economically attractive to us. So we think the two big catalysts for the share price are Rod Ruin and also mining reform, which we think is coming, and feel pretty confident. Resolute Mining out of Australia had picked up two concession agreements last year here in Egypt, and as you know, recently took a stake in Orca, so they're very keen on the Arabian Nubian Shield, and they're holding on to those. Looking forward as well to a change into the mining regime here.
What about road access, labor force, water, electricity, things like that for your projects?
Orca's got some great ground, and I'm very keen on what they're doing. But the huge difference between us and Orca, and really anyone working in Egypt, is infrastructure. The government over the years has spent a lot in infrastructure. We have high power lines running through our concession area. We have a brand new four-lane highway. Our camp is 32 kilometers into the desert, so we have 32 kilometers away. We have that. Water is an issue in the sense that you either have to pump it from the Nile or the Red Sea, or you have to find aquifers that can supply you. Now, we have a cement company near us that has a bore field that supplies it with water. So, the water is, although an issue, it's not a major one. And even to pump it from the Nile is not overly expensive. And we've got two major airports nearby. We have a good supply of low-cost labor in the area. And our finding costs at Hammam are below $10 an ounce. So, as far as a cost-effective area, we don't have to go and build a huge amount of infrastructure to be successful. And you know, you couple that with, and this is across the Eastern Desert overall, is that most areas are mineralized from surface. So again, you don't, coupled with all the infrastructure, you don't have a lot of overburden to take away. The Eastern Desert is barren rock. Nobody lives out there. There's no running water. There's no vegetation. There's no cover. And so you have very, very limited environmental issues, you know, almost to the point that you really don't have any environmental issues. So as far as an operating environment, Egypt is good, and it's politically stable. So, you know, it is actually a very good place to be as an exploration company. You've got a lot of, as I say, unexplored areas that offer a lot of opportunity. And yet on the other side, you know, it's not like you're out in the middle of, you're really not out in the middle of nowhere.
Is there community support for your projects right now?
Absolutely. We have five expats, geologists who work down in the desert, and me, and everybody else that works for us, which is about 50 people in Egypt, are Egyptian. So we have a very low foreign footprint here. We have Egyptian geologists as well that are part of the exploration team, and they do a good job, and they're learning. We train people. We take graduate geologists and train them up. And so, you know, we have, you know, we have a lot of support from the local villages and towns that are near us, because obviously we provide jobs. Plus, you know, all the, you know, we have food suppliers, fuel suppliers, water suppliers, you know, all the various businesses that benefit from our being there.
Could you please discuss Aton's management and directors and how you've been able to create value for shareholders in your past?
One of the things that, you know, I mean, I think is a strength of Aton is our people. We have very, very good people, and we go through some of the, I'll talk a little bit myself first. I've been working in Egypt nearly three decades. I'm from Texas, and I came in the oil and gas business, the drilling, and I had a successful oil field service company here, and also that also worked in Sudan. I got involved in mining here back in 1995 with Centamin. So I was there in the early days up until our declaration of commerciality in 2001. I then, the Aton originally was called Alexander Nubia. And I was asked to join, I joined the board there in 2009, 2010, we went public. So I'm the longest serving director here, and then I took over as CEO back in 2015. So I spent a lot of my career working in Egypt. You know, I'm familiar with business here, and so you know, my experience is well suited. And then in terms of our exploration team, Rick Cavney, who's our VP of exploration, I knew at Centamin. He was the original exploration geologist at Sukari and is really one of the people credited with discovering Sukari. And he knows this part of the world very, very well. He's got a wealth of experience. Javier Arduna, Tim Neal, Paul Angus all have experience here. And, you know, I think we have, as far as our area, we have one of the best exploration teams, certainly, that you could ever hope to have. So, and they're the key to actually unlocking a lot of this stuff. And they've done an excellent job of doing that. In terms of our directors, Well, I mean, Bill Koutsouras, Giles Bynum, and David Lang all were at Endeavor. David Lang was previously CEO of True Gold, which was sold to Endeavor for $300 million. Bill Koutsouras was the CFO of Endeavor. Tony Clements has been involved as a broker in London for many years and raised money from many companies. Successfully, and actually, in fact, arranged financing back in the 80s for Samuel Raggi, who brought Centamin to Egypt, for companies that he was very successful with, one of which became Normandy Mining. Tanel Vakk is an Estonian. As you probably know, we have two Estonian investors who own just under 50%. So out of our 267 million shares, 190 of them are held by insiders. He and his partner have built up a very successful business in telecommunications and real estate in Estonia. And then our advisors. I think that we have an outstanding group of advisors who are active. Tuki Angus, you know, people will know as the ex-chairman of Nevsun and K92. Ian Stalker, again, was K92 and then also ran Uramin, which is a very successful uranium mining company. Tom Maher was the country manager, VP in charge of this area for Apache. Apache is a U.S. oil company that is the largest oil producer in Egypt. It is also the largest foreign investor in Egypt. And then he and a group of ex-Apache executives set up a new company, which has been funded by private equity called Apex. And they've picked up two blocks in the Western Desert. And then James Leahy, again, very successful company, Bacanora Minerals, which is a lithium play out of Mexico and has done very well. And then Ahmed Mahami, who is a longtime banker and financier here in Egypt and has worked for the largest bank here and now has run for the last 25 years his own investment banking firm. So I think that overall, we have a very, very, not only executive management team, but an actual, the operational management team as well, and especially our exploration geologists.
You mentioned the partnership you have with the Egyptian government, which all mining companies do. Is there anything more you can share about any joint venture partnerships you have and or any streaming or royalty agreements?
We don't have any joint venture. But this past spring in a financing, Sandstorm invested $2.1 million in us, and that gives them a 1% overriding royalty on our production from any of our projects within our license area. And they've been very, very supportive, and they, you know, obviously they think that what we have has great potential. So that was a very encouraging investment for us.
Did Sandstorm's geologists, I know they have a team of geologists, did they come out and look at your projects firsthand before they made that investment?
No, they made that investment by looking at, I mean, we sent them a lot of data and they reviewed it. They did not come out and look at it per se.
What about your burn rate and your treasury of the company right now? Can you talk about that?
Our burn rate on an average, if you take it over a year, and we're not drilling all the time, but our burn rate is somewhere around usually 260, 270,000. Now, when we're drilling, that goes up, and it can go up during those periods of drilling, to around $500,000 a month, and that's predominantly the drilling contractor. If you take it per meter, diamond drilling here costs us approximately $250 a meter all in. RC is about $150 a meter all in. And when you look at it, most of 80% of all the money that we raise or we spend goes into the ground. Our overheads here and in Vancouver are very, very nominal.
What else would you like to share? This has been a very thorough overview of Aton Resources. Is there anything you'd like to share to the mining investors that are listening before we conclude?
Well, I think that, you know, it's an area that I think really needs to have, you know, people need to take a closer look at. I think that there are things that, you know, it does take a bit of understanding because it does have a slightly different economic regime than, you know, you would find in most places. It's not, to be honest with you, it's not a killer, but if you're here, but it certainly is one that has put off others from coming. And I think most people know that. But the potential here is huge. I mean, one of the reasons that we like being here and we really focus on here is because we are, one of the first people here. We know the geology. Our projects are far more developed than anyone else, obviously. And so we think that, you know, for us and in particular our shareholders, what we're doing here and what the potential holds is huge. And I think that, as I say, I mean, the government, the new government here is really set, bent on developing foreign investment, encouraging foreign investment, creating a very investment-friendly environment that attracts people into the country. And they realize that that's an important part of developing Egypt overall. And they see mining as being one of those that really fits Egypt well. Egypt has a large unemployment rate. Mining creates non-exportable jobs. It creates an environment where you have other industry businesses, welders, builders, truck drivers, all benefit. So I think the geology, the opportunity, and the reform of the mining industry all make this place one of the more exciting places to be at the moment.
For investors wanting to learn more, you can go to atonresources.com and take out your finance app on your smartphone and type in the ticker symbol AAN. If you're following it on the TSXV, or if you're in the U.S., type in ANLBF. When you go to Aton's website, make sure you sign up for their email list. They got the drill results coming out this fall. And if you want to follow that, you'll be notified right away by signing up for the email list. Mark, I want to thank you for your time today and giving us a thorough overview of Aton Resources. I appreciate your time and thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Bill. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.